is digital marketer. Today, it's Dave Gerhart from Drift. Hi there, this is Darren, the producer of the show. Now, when we do our biggest conference of the year, Traffic and Conversion Summit, we have the chance to have some great conversations backstage. And I got to speak with Dave Gerhart, who is the VP of Marketing at Drift. Now, Dave's really making some waves in the marketing world. So in this episode, you'll hear about how Drift created their own marketing category and how he is getting amazing engagement on social. And later in the show, his tips for creativity. So let's have a listen. So I'm here with Dave Gerhart from Drift.
Hello.
So let's just dive right into it. So Dave, the world is changing. What the heck's going on?
I think that there's a huge change that's happened in the business world and just how people buy online. And sales and marketing are like the last industry to catch up to that. And so if you think about like Blockbuster, right? We all used to go to Blockbuster to get our movies. Then what happened? Netflix came on and they disrupted Blockbuster. Why? Because I could, instead of having to get in the car and go to Blockbuster and return my movies, I can just press one button and watch a Netflix movie, right? Or Borders, it used to be a bookstore. Then Amazon came along. Why would you ever buy a book off of Amazon? Because either you could get it at your house in 2 days or get it on your Kindle now. Taxis was the other example that I used, right? Yeah. You used to have to stand on the corner and wait for a taxi. Now you pull up Uber and Lyft on your phone. So all the companies that are winning or have won have one thing in common, and that is now, the word now, right? They all connect us now with the things we want now. But there's a huge disconnect because that's not how sales and marketing works, right? And the reason why this is more important than ever is it's not just that we are impatient and we want things now, but it's because there's really two reasons. Number one is options. So there's more options for consumers than ever before, right? Every industry, there's infinite amount of competitors and other options. The other one is information, right? You and I are doing a podcast. Every company has a podcast. Every company has a blog. Like, we have 5 podcasts at Drift. You guys have 5 podcasts at Digital Marketer or whatever. How many you have?
3.
Right? 3.
Right now.
But everybody has a blog. Everybody's doing video. Everybody's on social media. There's so much information that like we're all drowning in it. We're all drowning in choice as consumers and information as consumers.
Yeah.
And so as a result, like, customers have all the power in the buying process now, not companies. If I was the only person that was selling this microphone and you needed a microphone, I could make you run a marathon to get the microphone. But if there's a million companies selling the microphone, I have to match how you want it, right? And so the problem is most marketing teams, like, they drive people to their website, they make them fill out a form, they make them wait 5 days, sometimes don't even follow up at all, then chase them down with endless emails and cold calls from reps. And it's just a nightmare. And that world was built for later, but we've all shifted to focus on now. And so the thing I was talking about was conversational marketing, because conversational marketing is what connects you now with the people who want to buy now. And so you can literally have somebody show up on your website and they get connected with somebody at your company 24/7, 365 to get the answer that they want and move on. That's how people want to buy today.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys kind of pretty much own that phrase, conversational marketing.
Yeah. I would tell you that we created it.
Yeah.
There's people who would say that's not true, but that's not true.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? Like, how did that happen?
So when the founders, David and Elias, started this company, they basically bet big on messaging, like chat, messaging, whatever, was going to eat the world.
Yeah.
So early on, I was the first full-time marketing person hired at Drift. And so early on in the company, David, our CEO, gave me this challenge. He said, you have to stop using lead forms and gated content to generate leads.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm going to quit.
Because that's amazing.
You measure me on leads and I can't capture them via forms and gated content. What the hell do you want me to do? And he's like, well, the point is you need to figure out how to do it with conversations, with chat. And so we got rid of all of our forms. We started pushing everything to chat and we didn't have a name for it. We knew what it, like, it's the same thing it is now. We didn't name it yet though. We called it conversation driven marketing. We call it chat marketing. We called it whatever. And we couldn't pick a name, because we just didn't think any of them were like sexy enough, you know, like tablet is a good name for what the iPad was, right? Conversational marketing was like not the sexiest name, but great marketing lesson that I learned from it was like, this thing didn't take off until we named it. You know, people just need a name. Oh, they need to associate with something. Oh, I'm doing blank. And if we didn't have a name, they're like, I'm doing chat messaging market, right? But it wasn't until we said, okay, we're just going to commit. We're going to call it conversational marketing. But it wasn't until the market started spitting it back at us. our customers were like, yes, I'm doing conversational marketing. People would come to our website and say, how do I use conversational marketing, right? It wasn't until people outside of the four walls at Drift started spitting that name back to us that this thing took off. And then came the analysts, and they named the category of conversational marketing as a, they finally recognized it as a channel they're writing research reports about. Then G2 Crowd, which is where like everybody goes to get reviews. It's like the Yelp for business software. They added conversational marketing. And so all these things started to happen in the market that surrounded us. And there's a great book that influenced us. It's a book is called Play Bigger by Christopher Lockhead and a bunch of other guys. There's like four or five authors on the book. And the whole concept of the book Play Bigger is that if you look at the companies over the last 20 years that have been the most successful, had the biggest IPOs, they all had this one thing in common, which is they created a category. And so you have to create a category. You don't always have to create a category. If you and I want to go start a company tomorrow and make a couple million bucks and or whatever, right? Doesn't mean we have to have a category for it. But for the aspirations that David and Elias had for Drift, which is to build an enduring, you know, 10 plus billion dollar company, by definition, we had to build a category. And so Play Bigger, the book is all about category design. Category design meaning like in order for conversational marketing to exist as a category, it can't just be Drift. We need competitors in this category. We need other people in the category because they're going to elevate this, right? The example in the book that they talk about is Apple did not invent the tablet. Right. But they had the best one.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was actually a good thing when they had the Kindle Fire and the Galaxy Note and all this other stuff, right? All those other companies helped Apple grow market share. I actually saw this happen firsthand. I was at a company called Constant Contact.
Okay.
And their biggest competitor was MailChimp.
Right.
And Constant Contact was created the category of email marketing. They were spending all this money on TV ads. And what was happening was they were actually, that was actually getting business for MailChimp, even though they never talked about MailChimp, because Constant Contact grew the category of email marketing. More people said, I need email marketing. And then they went to MailChimp because MailChimp was free. And so, you know, we have to design a category that is going to be bigger than us. So like, I want you to use Drift, but ultimately, like, I want you to be successful as a marketer. And there's four, five, six other companies you could use, yeah, right? Because the goal is to get the industry to change to conversational marketing, not necessarily has to be our way.
That's amazing that you are kind of on the ground floor.
Yeah. And then we've been doing a lot of the category creation things, which is like, we wrote the book.
Yeah.
We have a conference. We do speaking. Like, there's all kind of things that come out of that.
So the podcast, the book, how's the book going?
So the book has been amazing.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous about the book because it's a big project.
Is this your first book you've ever?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We've written a bunch of, you know, 40, 50 page books, but this is like through a publisher, distribution deal, you know, marketing plan, all that stuff. And I was nervous because I've had to figure out a lot of things in marketing, but I'd never marketed a book. And it's really tough just for a lot of reasons, right? Why does that? There's a million books. Why do you need another book? But the response has been amazing, which again speaks to the category, not that we did some amazing marketing tricks or whatever, right? But it's right now it's a top 20 business book in the US. So that's not books about marketing. That's like it's on the same list as like, you know, Robert Cialdini's Influence, right? There's amazing books on that list. It was number one in Amazon for new releases in marketing, in sales and commerce categories. The response has been amazing. And the reason I love the book is because it's basically a playbook. It's not a lot of like fluffy, like here's why, it's how. And so it's a book that like should be on a marketer's desk that's like dog-eared and highlighted and ripped up. And because they're like, oh, on page 74, they said do this. Oh, we should do that.
Yeah.
And so it's really tactical.
I mean, I feel like with Seeking Wisdom, the chemistry between you and Dave is such a huge part. You know, just two guys sitting in a room. Can you talk about, you know, where you see that going and how that's impacted your business?
Yeah. I think like what people want today is like they don't want to be marketed to, they don't want to be sold to, they don't want to feel like a podcast, like Seeking Wisdom, our podcast, for example, you said people like listening to it. People would not like listening to it if all we did was pitch Drift.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But the way that it grew was it was a conversation between us about what was happening at the company.
Yeah.
Hey, how do you run meetings? How do you hire? How do you fire? How do you train? How do you coach? How do you learn? Why do we do that thing versus that thing? Like, that's what people want. You know, just like this podcast, right? You talked about like, people want to feel like the stuff that I love learning is like, I want to be a fly on the wall.
Fly on the wall, yeah. Right? Behind the scenes, yeah.
I don't like when people are like, and so then you went to this college and you went to this, then you did this. Like, I'm a marketer. I want to hear two marketers talking about like the last campaign they just ran and how they did it. Or I want to talk about the five questions that every CMO asks in an interview process. Like, that's the stuff that I want. And so I wish we set out intentionally to do that in Seeking Wisdom. I wish that'd be a nice story, but the way we started Seeking Wisdom was I was a marketer who was hungry to get content out of the thought leader, which is David, our CEO.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a guy who's done five companies. He's been in the industry for 20 years. Every marketer is always trying to get CEO content.
Yes.
Right? I just wanted to ghostwrite for him.
Right.
But I could never get him to sit down and do it because CEOs never have the time to do that. So I had done a podcast on the side. And so I had a bunch of gear. Mm-hmm. And I just started like interviewing him once a week for 30 minutes. And the only purpose of that was so I could like then go write blog posts out of it. And what it morphed into was when we first did it, it was kind of awkward because I would just put him in a room. And I would just say, hey, I'm going to go sit at my desk, do my thing.
Yeah.
Why don't you just talk about this for 30 minutes? And that wasn't that good. And so we took another crack and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to interview you, but my voice is not going to be on it. So I'm just going to interview you so I can get what I want out of it, yeah. Right? from a writer. Okay, that was okay. But then it morphed into this thing where like it's this back and forth between two people who are at different stages in their career, right? And I think that's what people like is it's real and raw conversations, you know, whether it's him lecturing me about something that I did or coaching me or giving me advice or talking about a book that we read. Like, I think that's what people want. And so it's kind of morphed into this very real and authentic conversation. I think the great marketing today is about being real and about being authentic. You can't hide anymore, right?
Yeah.
People don't want to hear from a logo. They want to hear from people. And I think that's what, you know, Seeking Wisdom hits on a lot of those things.
So how well did you know Dave? Did you guys have a pretty strong relationship?
No, I didn't really know him. Like I had a podcast called Tech in Boston where yeah. I interviewed local founders and CEOs in Boston.
Yeah.
And I was super interested in, and so I was like really deep in the Boston startup scene. Like I could tell you every CEO and you know, which investors they raise money. And so I knew his name.
Yeah.
Cause he was an entrepreneur in Boston. And I knew he was a chief product officer at HubSpot, but he was always this like very mysterious guy to me because I never met him. I never see him at events. I never see him anywhere. And he reached out to me for Tech in Boston to promote like an office party that they were having. He DM'd me on Twitter and was like, hey, can you promote this out to your email list? Because I want to get people there for hiring. And I was like, sure. Never met him in my life. And I was like, okay, this is my opportunity. While he was there in my DM inbox on Twitter, which he's never left since then, DC, I said, hey, sure, can I have you on my podcast though? And he said, yeah, sure, come by. So I went by Drift. It was Drift with two T's then. There was like five people at the company doing something way different than what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And I had him on my podcast and I was like, this guy is like who I hoped he would be, like super interesting, had all these great stories and he had all these non-conventional takes on things. Like he never hires MBAs. Or he doesn't believe in X or doesn't believe in Y. And I was like, whoa, that was awesome. So I was like pumped to get the interview because very few people had done an interview with him. So I was just pumped to have like a scoop. And then the next day I'm like working on the show notes and I go to the Drift website. It was actually Drift on AngelList where they had a job posting. And I saw that they had a marketing manager position open. And so I just emailed him right on the spot. And I said, hey, it's me, the guy from yesterday. Like, I want this job. I want to be your first marketer.
Yeah.
And so I went in and I met with him and Elias, the two co-founders. And Elias put me in a room and he's a CTO, technical guy. He shuts the door. His first interview question for me was, tell me why you're a better marketer than I am.
Brilliant.
And so, yeah, so I didn't know him much before.
And what was the answer to that question?
Today I just would laugh and giggle at him. But
yeah.
But I talked him through like how I had built this side project, Tech in Boston, where I had a website, I had a newsletter, I had an email list, I had social following, I had 60,000 downloads of this podcast, and I showed him how I did it and all this stuff. And he was like, oh, okay, you haven't proven yourself at a company, but you do it in a side project. Like, let's see if you could do it at Drift. And that was that was really the first way I got to know them. And then, I mean, obviously through building a company, you get to know people really well, you know, a lot of sharing, you know, airplane rides and hotels and car rides and text messages and videos. So I've gotten to know him very well now, but I didn't know him very well to beginning. Also, like, I think it's unique to be in my position in marketing. I've gotten to know him better than others because he is a piece of the brand and the face. He doesn't like when I do that, but I'm telling him like Drift is you. Like, I would be silly for me to not use him as a marketing channel, right? And so I've gotten to know him well because I'm asking him for ideas and for topics and then obviously through the podcast, which is, you know, we've done 150 episodes or whatever through 3 years. We have no topics. You got to come up with a topic for tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about? So
I mean, like, the podcast is an amazing channel for someone like Dave, isn't it? Because it's quite an intimate channel, but there's also a level of anonymity to it too.
It's perfect for him because like he's never And this is what makes him great. Like, he's never going to prepare.
Right.
He's never going to write you anything. Or if he does write, he just started an internal company newsletter that he sends out on Sunday nights. And I think that's when he sits down and has like long thought, and he needs to be very thoughtful, but he doesn't read the prep notes. Like, it's literally, I got to come up with a topic. My job is to listen really well.
Yeah.
And so if I'm going on a walk with him and getting a coffee and he's ranting about this thing, somewhere in my head, I'm like, ooh, that's a good idea. And I write that down. And he doesn't know ever what we're going to record. And then we go into the podcast and booth and we literally hit record. And then I say, okay, today on Seeking Wisdom, we're going to talk about blank. And I already know it's going to be good because I know he was ranting about it the other day. And so my job is just to like kind of find all those ways to tease out. But yeah, you're right. It's a great channel because he just gets to walk in and talk. And my job is to be kind of a host that like pulls the stories out of him.
Yeah. It's probably therapeutic for him.
Yeah. Well, actually, I hope he listens to this. I'll give you one little secret.
Okay.
My secret is I take his ideas and then spit them back. And he's like, oh man, that was a great idea for this episode. I'm like, because you already said it. You already knew it was your idea. Yeah.
That's brilliant. I love that. So I love that story you just told. I mean, I think that's so encouraging for, you know, maybe people starting out or people, you know, just that progression from just kind of reaching out, you know, doing the podcast together and look where it's gone to now. I mean, that's so cool.
I learned more doing a side project than I did at a company because, well, I think you need both. That's not good advice to just do a side project because I think the things I used to hate about being in a big company actually helped shape me, like how I work and how I learn and do a lot of that stuff. But what I learned doing a side project was, like at a big company, like let's say I was at HubSpot, for example, there's 1,500 people there.
Yeah,
I did not have the key to like touch a button on the website and that was going to change everything, right? But when I started my own, when I had my little side project, I had to build the website.
Right.
I had to figure out how to set up the RSS feed for the podcast and get it into iTunes, right? I had to sell sponsorships. I had to ask for money for the first time. You had to learn how to sell. I had to build an email list. And so I got to do all these things. Like I was my own little company. And then lucky enough, they took a chance on me at Drift, which is like, I've never done it at a big scale. But I've done this, I've done that, I've done that. And then I got to go do it. Like then the last 3 years, I've basically spent doing it at Drift. And so like I was the first content person at Drift. I was the first video person at Drift. I was the first writer, the PR person, social media person, events person. Because I think your early marketing hire has to be somebody who can figure out all the channels.
Yeah.
And then now I actually don't do any of those things anymore. Because the goal is to be like, okay, I'm going to run two events by myself. See if they work, see if they're going to be a good channel for us. And then now we went and hired somebody who's great at events and she knows how to run it and can take it, right? And so I think that was a really cool learning experience, which is like to get to do it on a bigger stage for a company and then pass it on.
So that's amazing. So what would you say is the key characteristic that you've sort of displayed to be able to do all those things at that kind of level?
Man, I hate this word because I think this word is getting turned into a lot of the wrong things, like the word hustle, you know? Like I'm a
like problem solving almost.
Yeah, it's problem solving. Yeah. That's what it is. It's problem solving. And I never have said, no, that's not my job.
Right.
And I think as a marketer, like that is such a valuable thing where like, you know, you're going to learn by doing. And I think, I never said, no, that's not my job. And I've learned by doing, which is like, okay, you need a new landing page. I've never done a landing page ever. Okay. I'm going to figure out how to do it. Right. Yeah. Okay. Done. Okay, we got to do videos. Okay, how do I do videos? Oh, I got an iPhone. I got YouTube. Like, okay, I'm going to figure it out. And so it's this constant process of like you figure it out. And then once you've done that, you then build what we talk about on the podcast a lot, like reps and sets, right?
Yeah.
Like the only reason I think that I can write decent copy now is because I've just written so many subject lines and headlines and blog posts and decks like over the last, and that's only been 3.5 years, right? Imagine if I extend that out 20 years, 30 years. I'm like, you have to learn by doing, you know, you do need to learn some theory and like I'm a big believer in reading and learning, but like I think you got to learn by doing, and the way that you learn by doing is by being super open as a marketer and never saying that's not my job, because even if you don't want to do that long term, like here's an example at Drift, I can't even write my name nice. I'm not a designer.
Okay.
I'm not a creative person. I don't know how to make videos, but I manage the creative team at Drift, a team of designers and video people. And I don't know this pixel from that pixel. I don't know a color palette or anything, right? But I've figured out like what we need as a business and then how to work with them to get what we need. And so I think marketing is just all about like constantly reinventing yourself and learning by doing. And now I could go do whatever after this and be like, yeah, I've managed a creative team. I know how to do that.
it's great that you can pinpoint what your strengths and weaknesses are so acutely as well.
That's the other thing is David pushed me really hard on strengths and weaknesses. And man, I give him so much credit for this. I hope he listens because I've always wanted to say this part to him, but like, he put me in a position to triple down on my strengths.
Okay.
Where I was selfishly, I didn't know it. It was selfishly like ego wise, but wasn't doing it on purpose to focus on my weaknesses. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at spreadsheets. I'm not good at data. I'm not good at analysis. And so I was focusing more on like trying to become well-rounded and like raise those skills, where he was like, dude, double down on the things you're good at and you have a chance to be world class at like that thing. And there's so many examples like that where like he's like, you know, you're going to be way more successful, make way more money, have a lot more opportunities if you can become world class at these one or two things. Like become amazing at storytelling and copywriting and brand. That's going to be more than like if you could get, you know, up to mediocre level at math, right? And there's a great book from Peter Drucker called Managing Oneself.
Yeah.
It's about 40 pages long. And he gave it to me and I try to read it once a year. But Peter Drucker said in like the 1950s, he said, you know, focus on your strengths, not your weaknesses. And that sounds like obvious advice, but he said, because it takes so much effort. Like if I'm bad at math, okay, I'm going to spend a year trying to get better at math. So what? I can be like a B at math. Or if I'm already a B+ copywriter,
right,
I could spend a year at copywriting to become an A+ copywriter, right? What's going to be more valuable for me and the business? If I can be an A+ at something or like a B, it's the A+ piece all day. And so he put me in a position where like I got to focus on those things, and we hired a bunch of other people in different roles where like I don't have to think about that stuff and not do what I'm not good at.
Right. That's awesome. All right. So I have a question for you. You've had a really successful strategy with your LinkedIn posts.
Yeah.
Can you give us some insight into that?
The only secret is I've just like paid a lot of attention. It doesn't take, if you just take a little effort and look at what's working on LinkedIn, you get a sense of like, if I try to pitch you Drift, it's not going to work. The topics that really kill it on LinkedIn are like about people, your career.
So were you really giving people rides to the airport?
Yeah. Oh, I did that. I did that. I did. I did one because we sat in there was traffic in the tunnel and we sat there for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did give somebody a ride.
So Dave offered to give people a ride to one of their conferences on LinkedIn. And that just completely blew my mind. But it created so much engagement when you did that.
Shout out to you, Ed Fry. His name's Ed Fry. The LinkedIn started because I noticed that like all these people were doing text posts.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is everybody trying to do these text posts on LinkedIn? Like no links, right? And so I started doing them and they just like took off. And why? Because on a channel where everyone's promoting, like if most of LinkedIn is like, we're hiring, I love my company, we're doing so great, look at our growth. We're like, if all of a sudden it's a text post of somebody that's like, I blew it in my first job interview, I wasn't prepared, I didn't know what to talk about, that's like, boom, you've got their attention.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is such an easy format. And for me, Twitter was kind of just getting like, you know, Twitter, I love Twitter, but I also hate Twitter. It just is like a troll, you know, a troll pond. And so LinkedIn is a great audience for us in B2B. And so I just started posting more on LinkedIn and the engagement was insane.
Yeah.
And people were commenting and it was real and it was valuable. And like, they weren't just saying like, cool. They were saying like, wow, I love this. This is great. I'm going to take this back to my company and blah. And then LinkedIn added video. And I was like, ooh, this is fun because I'm very comfortable on camera and like I'm okay sticking my phone in my face and walking down the street and making a video. And so I just started doing 2 or 3 of those a week. Mm-hmm. And I was able to stand out because not a lot of people were doing it, and not a lot of people were, you know, maybe that's not a great channel that a lot of people are comfortable with. And so I just kind of just started, it's almost like a mini blog or podcast, right, where I would just talk about like, hey, so this morning I was interviewing somebody and like it was just in the moment thoughts that I had, like the same way that I would use Twitter, and for whatever reason it worked. I mean, not for whatever reason, I think consistency is key, like on any, to build a platform, right? If you want to build your podcast, like you got to be consistent. And so I try to make it a habit of like, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, just posting something on LinkedIn to just stay consistent, and almost turned it into my little blog. I was thinking about starting my own blog or something, and I was just like, I just use my LinkedIn platform as a way that is my blog, basically is LinkedIn.
Yeah. All right. This has been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Dave. So one last question for you. If you were to leave our listeners with one sort of like, you know, kind of takeaway or piece of advice, what's something they could really be chewing on?
I don't know. A thing that I've been thinking a lot about is creativity, which seems like this big fluffy topic, but I think that sales and marketing specifically, like we've started as an industry, has started to like lack creativity because we've just fallen in love with online marketing channels and optimizing things and funnels and that stuff is so important, don't get me wrong. But in a world where anybody can do that, I think you have to be able to stand out. And the way that you're going to do that is by being creative. And so if I go back to my stuff that I talked about earlier, where we live in a world of, we call it infinite supply, right? There's more options and information than ever. If everything is basically becoming a commodity, how are you going to win people over? And that's being creative. And I think whether you're a sales rep trying to find ways to book meetings and get more people interested, you got to be creative, right? Everybody hates, I mean, speaking of LinkedIn, how many times do you go on LinkedIn and you see somebody just blasting a sales rep for like a bad outreach email?
Yeah.
That they got. So the best sales reps today that I know that I can think of are like the really creative ones. And same thing, the best marketers are the really creative ones. And so I don't know what the secret is to being creative, but I would focus on like, how can you rewrite the rules of your industry? If everybody in your industry is going left, I want to find out how I go right. So that's the thing I would think about the most. The thing that has been amazing, I never thought of myself as a creative person. Seriously, never thought of that, because I thought that creativity meant like, oh, you can design, you can draw. But what I realized was like, when I started reading more, I never read, and you know, if you listen to the podcast, so you probably know, like I never read. Now I read a lot, and I'm always listening to podcasts, listening to audiobook. Like today alone, I have read 20 pages in a book. I listened to an audiobook for an hour at the gym, and I listened to 20 minutes of a podcast, just filling like holes in my day. And I obviously can't pay attention to all of it, but being like an avid learner now has been like this. I can't say enough good things. I get chills when I think about it, because being a learner has unlocked this creativity thing in my, I don't know, it's unbelievable. Like, I have more ideas, and I'm not trying to sound cocky, but like I have more ideas than I can keep up with. And I think it's because I'm constantly like feeding my brain with like new stuff. And it doesn't all have to be like, I'm in B2B. And so it doesn't all have to be, it's not all B2B information, right? Like one of the biggest books that's had an impact on me this year was called Superbench, about Shep Gordon, who was the manager of Alice Cooper. And like, had he brought like the celebrity chefs thing to the United States, and like that has nothing to, he's not a marketer, he's not a B2B marketer, but that guy's a genius when it comes to like getting attention. And so like reading that book just unlocks levels of creativity. So I think if you're always learning, you will just start unlocking more ideas, and you'll have this like creative gene that will fuel whatever you're doing, whether you're in sales, whether you're in marketing, or whether you're building product.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Yeah. And then where would you like, I mean, obviously Seeking Wisdom is a fantastic podcast. Yeah. Listen to that, subscribe to that.
if you're willing to go and listen to another podcast, which you should. Yeah. It's short too. It's like, you know, 10, 15 minutes a week, Seeking Wisdom. Go to Seeking Wisdom. And then I'm also at Dave Gerhart everywhere online, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter.
All right, brilliant. Well, thanks, Dave. We really appreciate it.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Digital Marketer Podcast. For more information, go to digitalmarketer.com/podcast. Thank you for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and 3 unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.